Good morning. It is Henry Harris. It is Thursday, November 14th, 10 a.m. Welcome to another installment of the weekly Emunah call. We will be exploring the topic today of spatial disorientation as a metaphor, the phenomenon of pilots losing their way. Pilots losing their way and what they do about it in order to regain their way. And the metaphor, it's a really special metaphor in regards to our own lives. But first, we're going to begin with our customary review of what is this call about. This call is a conversation about a simple truth. We are exploring and looking to kind of clarify and understand more deeply a simple truth about the Creator's world and about our experience, how our experience helps us to see the truth. Really, we're after the truth. That is the mitzvah. The mitzvah of Emunah is to see the truth, to know the truth. That's really what it's about. And of course, parallel, the mitzvah of Lo Yelucha, not to believe in other powers, is to be able, one very precious and valuable angle of pursuing the truth is to be able to acknowledge what is not true, what cannot be true. So I want to share with you that just revisiting my experience of this whole undertaking, you know, when I first began to learn about these principles, when I first had a deeply moving experience, and then kind of my journey to how to go about looking for more of it. You know, I had an experience where I was struggling and I really felt stuck. Like, I just was not having the emotional experience that I wanted in life. I was finding myself consistently uninspired and complaining and dissatisfied about a variety of things. And it just felt so frustrating to me and very, just, it was frustrating and discouraging. I just had all kinds of judgments about how I could and should be doing better. I was really frustrated and dissatisfied with my level of performance. That's how I viewed it. You know, my performance was 100% kind of under the gun, under my scrutiny. I just didn't understand, why am I not doing better in my general mental state, my general feeling of great gratitude, my general feeling of inspiration and motivation, and all of those things. I was just not. And over the course of a meaningful conversation over several days, at a certain point, it occurred to me, wait a second, I'm not actually the source of those. Like, I'm not the guy who does that. I don't generate the emotional state of mind. And I saw it insightfully. My mood shifted in the course of conversation. And what's fascinating is that that's happening for everybody all the time. Like, people are having ups and downs. They're moving into a nicer state of mind. They're moving into a less nice state of mind. It's happening all the time. What I came to understand during that, what happened was that I saw it kind of insightfully, meaning I saw myself that the experience of, I had a mood shift, but I saw that I had a mood shift and that there was nothing in the world that had changed, and my mood lifted quite nicely, right? That's what I want to point out here, is that the mood shift itself, that's happening. People are having mood shifts all the time. Now, they might not notice, or they might not understand the mood shift, right? Either it's not even noticeable to them, or they might notice it, but they attribute it to something that is not actually the source of that shift. Like, they might think, well, it's because finally my wife agreed with me about this after we've been discussing and arguing about this for months, or finally my child has seems to be, you know, modifying his behavior, or finally I got the recognition I thought, or finally, whatever it is, you know, he could have a mood shift but misunderstand the basis behind it. And so I had a mood shift, but I saw insightfully that nothing had changed. Nothing that, according to my prior rubric of what causes change and what prevents change, none of that, it just got debunked, because I saw that my mood lifted beautifully, the world felt lighter, And I could also see clearly that it had nothing to do with anything shifting, and that it was just, you know, like an internal weather pattern move, the way that we can sometimes be astonished by the way that the weather and outside can go from like 70 and nice to 42 and cold in the course of an hour or two. I mean, I've seen that before. I definitely have experienced that. And that's what I saw, is that my mood moved dramatically, and nothing had, you know, according to my prior rubric, could really account for it. And then I saw that I was endowed with the ability to sense that, and that it's human. It's human to have the experience of a moving internal world, and it's human to be able to know that in an insightful way. And to me, that's the simple explanation of this Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that says, "Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem, beautiful or beloved is man, is a human being, that he's created in the image of God, that he has this, he's like a channel of divine energy. He's B'Tzelem Elokim. He is a creator. He's a flow. Through him flows this divine creative power." And then it says, "Chiba Yisera Shenadaslo." It's a measure of additional belovedness. It's an even greater level of preciousness that he can become cognizant of that. He can tune into the fact that there's flowing through him this divine flow. That's really what happened for me, is that I could see that it was just like all my struggle to try and shift my emotions was just misunderstanding. Like, it's just not my lane, you know? It's not my lane. I have a lane, and the lane is not changing and managing my feelings, you know? Now, let me just be very clear. That was 6 years ago, I think. I didn't like emerge into a world of no struggle and no distress and no anxiousness. I continued to experience all kinds of anxious and negative feelings, and I continued to struggle with much of them. Because I, as much as I kind of glimpsed the beauty and the truth of this notion that I'm not the source of my emotional states of mind, and I don't need to run from them, and I don't need to change them because it's just not my department. Even though I saw that, there was still a part of me that like wanted to get good at it. Like, it's funny how we can get a glimpse of truth, but still, I'm speaking for myself, you know, we can get a glimpse of something really precious and true, but yet still have misunderstanding about it, whereby it looks like, okay, I could get more of this. I should listen to the right people. I should talk to the right people. I should practice the right practices, and I'll get more of that kind of insightful understanding. You know, and I did. I proceeded to pursue, and some of what I did was highly constructive, but some of it was very much organized around kind of a different version of the same misunderstanding. Like, okay, how can I get better at this so I can have nicer feelings? You know, really at the root of it all was kind of a desire to get nicer feelings in my marriage, nicer feelings with my children, nicer feelings in the work I do, wherever I was. And, you know, and I look back over these last 6 years and I see that there's been unquestionably a growth process, and there was unquestionably continued misunderstanding, you know. And so all I can say is that I'm appreciative of the core principle. If I could try to summarize it, is just the valuing the truth, you know, the recognition that it's so valuable. It's just so valuable to sense the simple truth that I'm having a divine energy experience, that I'm not there's nothing causing my psychological experience other than the single simple source of all existence, the single power. There is no other power. It cannot be. Now, does that mean that because I might know the logic of that, therefore I, you know, the barometer of that truth is whether or not I feel good or I feel less struggle? Not really, because, you know, like I've shared in the past, you know, we didn't extract ourselves from Egypt. We didn't do that. We were there at the door when it was time to leave, But we weren't the ones who got ourselves out. Does that mean that because we couldn't get ourselves out, that we didn't have an extraordinarily valuable thing to do while we were still in Egypt? We definitely did. We had a beautiful, extraordinarily meaningful thing to do while we were still stuck in Egypt. We were there at the door. We had this clarity that said, look, we're here in Egypt simply because God is keeping us here. It's not because they're actually powerful over us. It's not because there's no precedent for a Jew leaving this land because they got the biggest army, they got the biggest ruler. None of that. We're here because this is where God is keeping us. That's the simplest layer of truth that I'm, looking to emphasize, that simple emunah that says all there is divine energy. All I'm experiencing is this psychological experience I'm having is accounting. It as much as it pulls me, it feels so compelling that it's coming from my spouse, from my child, from my past, from whatever it is. I can stand in this truth that affirms, no, there's only one. There's only one source. And that is enough. It's enough. It's an extraordinary accomplishment. I can't overstate it. The power to have that inward recognition, that inward affirmation, that's emunah. That is one of the constant commandments. It is the basis of our lives, and it is itself an extraordinary accomplishment, and it leads to new doors opening, because we're there at the doorway when God opens the door, and he opens doors for us. We're not in control of the timing, but we can sure as well play our role of staying there at the door and accomplishing that mitzvah. So, that there's a lot to say about that, but that's my introduction. That's just kind of reflecting my experience of where and how this truth has become more visible to me, the struggles I've had even after I had an insight, and I continue to have. It's not like I don't still have them, but there's unquestionably a different world. The world looks different to me today than it did 6 years ago, and I'm astonished by it. I don't de-emphasize the role I've played. I do value the role I've played of looking for the truth. It's amazing how precious that is. Of wanting to know the truth, of wanting to acknowledge what cannot be true. It's amazing to me. And I'm still in awe of the degree to which that simple role has somehow led me to be living in a really different world, like a really different world where so many more things feel okay than they used to. I'm very grateful for that. And guess what? So is my wife and my children. They're also grateful. To the degree that I'm not, viewing them as problems in the same way. Okay, so that's my intro. Now I'm going to transition into a really profound metaphor that I have been kind of hanging out with recently. It's called spatial disorientation. Listen to this. A pilot is flying a plane, and he enters into a bank of clouds, and he does not see anything other than like white mist in front of him, right? So generally speaking, human beings have the ability to have a sense of their place in the world. It's very valuable. It's very important to know your position relative to the world around you if you're going to move around, right? If you have no spatial, capacity or whatever. You can't see where things are relative to you. You can't see how quickly things are moving or not moving. Like, it could be a problem if you are looking to move around or things are moving at you and you don't know where you stand in the world. And generally speaking, we rely on our five senses to do that, right? If you're walking on the ground, if you're driving a car, you can see and you can feel your position, right? You have a sensory perception of your position relative to the world, relative to other things. And that is very valuable, right? It allows you to navigate. We don't think about it so much, but when we drive a car, we are relying on that kind of wisdom of that orientation that we trust, that is reliable, it's helpful. Now, what happens to a pilot potentially is that when he flies into a bank of clouds, he loses, he's just kind of like, he feels like he's floating, like he can't see his position relative to something else, and he can't see, you know, he doesn't have a clear sense as to like whether he's going up or he's going down. Like it becomes, all that sensory information becomes lost on him. Now, there's something else that we have that's part of our sensory perception. That's called the vestibular system. That sounds like a fancy word. I don't really know a lot about it, but the vestibular system is just simply kind of like that, the fluids in our ears that give us a perception of our own movement, right? But that vestibular system is only partial information. It's only part of the information. It's certainly less significant than the five senses, right? You could spin around with your eyes closed and then you open your eyes and you feel disoriented because your vestibular system is telling you you're moving. It could be you're not moving, or it could be that it could tell you it seems like the world is moving and it's not moving. It's just that your liquids got shaken up and now they're giving you information. It's a real perception. It's a real feeling. It's just not accurate. It's not a description of the world around you, right? So these pilots are flying. They've lost touch with kind of their reliable mechanism to tell them where they are and how they're moving, and they start to get a perception based on something that is kind of, it's normally like, I think the vestibular system is normally like 10% of the data that makes up our ability to read and experience our accurate position, et cetera. But 90% of it is, you know, our sensory stuff. And so when the absence of that 90%, the 10% becomes overstated, it becomes highly exaggerated, and God forbid a pilot could see or experience himself to be flying straight when in fact he's banking, he's going, you know, hard left or right, or he could experience himself to be going down and in fact he's going up. And, you know, there are unfortunately fatal accidents that occur because of this. I mean, you can imagine the terror. The terror as well as the objective problem associated with losing one's orientation. Now, the opportunity in that instance is that, well, what is a pilot to do in that case? So the pilot has to read his instruments, right? His body and his internal experience is telling him, I'm going down, I'm going down, or I'm going up, or whatever it is, but there's a sense that he has that, like, maybe I don't know what I'm really seeing. In that moment, the challenge is to become skilled. Like, there's an actual training associated with a pilot learning how to, like, it's a normal phenomenon, right? Part of the training for pilots is to know that you can and should expect that there will be times in your normal responsibilities as a pilot where you will lose your normal capacity to have a sense as to where you are and how you're moving. That's the first step in training as a pilot, is to know it's normal to have unreliable internal information about your movement and your position. That's the first step. And then there's a training of kind of learning to look beyond your feelings, like your feelings are there, but you're learning to look beyond them to the instruments. The instruments, there's an altimeter, I don't know what the names of these instruments are, but they're the instruments in your cockpit are actually telling you, are you elevating, are you turning, are you whatever. And it can be a very big challenge for the pilot to be willing to put aside his internal feelings in order to read the instruments, because the feelings are very strong. You know, the feeling that he's going down and that he needs to go up could feel highly compelling to him, but the instrument in the cockpit is saying, no, you're doing the opposite. Literally, you're doing the opposite. I was so moved by this metaphor because I feel this is such a, I mean, I feel this way. I feel like I'm a pilot, you know, I'm kind of flying this highly sophisticated, highly sophisticated spaceship, you know, like I'm a human being. A human being is a very sophisticated and complicated being with a whole range of experiences, and I'm kind of flying this cockpit, and there are times where, like, I just feel like I've lost my bearings. Like, wait a second, who is this kid that, you know, like, alarm systems are blaring, like, unsafe, unsafe, danger, danger, or who, what is this scenario? What, like I just become filled with a feeling of loss of control. Like, I don't know where I am. I don't have is this safe? Is this not safe? Is this reliable? Is it not reliable? Where am I? What am I doing? And I feel disoriented, and I'm not sure. I'm desperately interested in regaining the feeling of being oriented, right? That's what I want. When I become disoriented and I feel unsettled, my first instinct is get settled, get orientated. Yeah. But the nature of the challenge there is that you don't have the ability. The pilot's job in that point is not to lean into his feeling more deeply. Let's look for a feeling of orientation. That's not his job. It's, again, part of his training is to know that there will be times where his normal orientation capacity is not available to him, but it's okay. That's normal, right? The experience of disorientation is part of flying a plane, and that's true for a human being too. The experience of being, of feeling disorientated, of feeling not in control, is normal for the human experience, and there is kind of a way of handling that. That's, to me, so powerful. Like, that's the first lesson that a pilot needs to know in approaching the whole task of being a competent pilot, is that he can expect that there will be disorientation. So that's true for me too as a human being. There will be times in my day where I will feel out of sorts. I'll feel out of control. I'll feel a highly unsettling and disorientating experience. Now, in that moment, what are my instruments, right? The pilot, the cue that the pilot is meant to take is to say, okay, I can look toward instruments that tell me something more reliable than my feeling in the moment, right? To me, and I'm still kind of exploring this muscle, but, and I'm interested in your thoughts about it. To me, what it means to look to the instruments is to look to the truth, you know, to look to the truth about how our lives are working. You know, the simple truth that I'm having a divine experience right now, right? I'm having, it's in and of itself, it's not a danger. In and of itself, it doesn't require me to take immediate action, right? And in a certain sense, it's really just, there's a limit to the metaphor because, you know, as a pilot, you need to take, well, I guess in life, too, you also need to take action, but the action is going to be, the most reliable action is going to be gained by looking kind of beyond my feelings to what's true. You know, that's really the bottom line, is that the instruments are kind of a metaphor for what's true. The truth about this moment is available by looking to Emunah, by looking to Lo Yeh Lecha. I'm having an alarming sensation. I'm having an experience of disorientation. It's human, and I'm really just having a divine experience. And that ability to be in the discomfort and know that it is a divine experience, it's not the spouse, it's not the child, it's not the finances, it's not, not that there isn't action to be taken, but the first thing to look to is the truth, you know, something that's beyond and out, and that's beyond my feeling in the moment. The feeling in the moment is itself, you know, it's not, I'm not looking to read the feeling. I'm looking to see what's true about the feeling. That to me is really the instruments. So I'm, like I said, I'm still kind of exploring this metaphor. I love it. I think it's incredible. And I'm really interested to hear your thoughts about it. So I'm going to pause here and now open up the conversation. I'm going to take off the mutes and open the floor. Good morning, everybody. And also I'm going to pause the recording.